Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
As old millennials, we've been prioritizing health and wellness a lot more these past few years. While we may not be Spencer pratting it up, not just yet. I mean, Emily, don't count us out here. With crystals on our bodies, we are thinking how much more we need to stay hydrated.
Recently, I started traveling with at least one liquid IV stick in my bag to make sure I'm staying extra hydrated, especially when it gets hotter or after a night of a little too much fun.
Liquid IV is the category-winning hydration brand fueling your well-being, and their hydration multiplier is the one product you're missing in your daily routine. Use it the first thing in the morning, before a workout, when you feel run down, or after a long night out and on long flights.
My sister recently got married, and as her maid of honor, I put liquid IV sticks in all the bachelorette party bags, and my sister and her husband put them in their goodie bags when we traveled to Costa Rica for the wedding. Those came in super handy after hitting an open bar in the sweltering heat. I'm a big fan of, it was very nice to have. I'm a huge fan of the watermelon ones and the tangerine flavor, which has an immune boost, even better when you're traveling and worried about keeping your immune system going. They fit easily in a toiletry case or even a tiny purse, so it's super easy to pour one in your water bottle.
One stick of liquid IV in 16 ounces of water hydrates you 2 times faster and more efficiently than water alone and contains 5 essential vitamins, B3, B5, B6, B12, and vitamin C, with 3 times the electrolytes of traditional sports drinks and probably, I mean, I know for a fact because I recently had a Gatorade, a much better taste.
Oh, absolutely. Get 20% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use code OLDMILLENNIALSPOD, that's OLDMILLENNIALSPOD, at checkout. That's 20% off anything you order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code OLDMILLENNIALSPOD at liquidiv.com. Bye!
Our podcast producer, my 12-year-old Boston Rat Terrier, Murray, has a very discerning palate. Luckily, Nom Nom's Turkey Fare recipe not only has fresh ingredients, but it's also made with his favorite food, brown rice.
It sure is. Nom Nom's food is full of fresh proteins your dog loves and the vitamins and nutrients they need to thrive. You can actually see proteins in vegetables like beef, chicken, pork, peas, carrots, kale, and more. Your dog's health starts in the gut, and a better diet means softer coats, more energy, and better breath.
This is how Nom Nom works. You tell them about your dog, age, breed, weight, allergies, protein preferences. They'll tailor a specific amount of individually packaged Nom Nom meals and send them straight to you. Store the meals in the freezer or fridge until it's mealtime. They'll give you specific instructions on how to transition your dog from foods like kibble to the always fresh Nom Nom for the best results. Watch your dog clean their dishes, dance for more dinner, and overall thrive. And if your dog is anything like Murray, he is going to dance for dinner and clean his dish sometimes at the same time.
Isn't it time to feel good about the food you're feeding your dog? Order Nom Nom today. Go to trynom.com/oldmillennials. That's trynom.com/oldmillennials and get 50% off your first order plus free shipping. Bye.
Hi.
Hello.
Welcome back to Old Millennials, a deep dive on shallow topics from the 90s and 2000s. I am one of your hosts, Margot Poupard.
And I'm your other host, Emily Bajan.
And while we are still on hiatus, it is not back to school for us because we are adults, so joke's on you, kids. We will be coming back later in September, I believe. So we are just going to finish out our little summer season that we've got going, where we are talking about And Just Like That. Now, we are covering episodes 8 and 9, and then next week we've got 10 and 11, and I think 11 is the finale, or possibly series finale, as people are speculating online.
Question mark.
Yeah. So, yeah, we've got two more episodes of this little mini season to go, and then we're going to be right back at it. I want to say that I'm enjoying watching this, but it's mixed. It's mixed to weird.
I think what's been the most disappointing this season is there's been glimmers of
hope. We're starting it disappointing?
Well, no. It's like there have been glimmers of hope this season. Last season, there were not many glimmers of hope. This
season,
what?
You're right. You're right. You're doing the typical Catholic, like, it could be worse.
There were glimmers of hope. And I think that's why I get angrier at times, is because we've been led to believe this show is going to pick up the pace now, and it's hit a good stride. Like, it's going to know what to do with itself. It feels like the magic is back. And then as soon as it feels that way, it immediately is like, ha, sucker, and then just goes off the deep end.
I told you, the writers fucking hate us.
Like, they really do.
What it feels like. But I think, like, the magic that you're referring to is, like, that really excellent, or at least, you know, excellent in the context of talking about the show, a 3-episode run that Samantha Irby wrote. I really felt like episode 8 landed like a fucking anvil a little bit. 9 was like a bit of an improvement. But I will say the one thing, and I know I complained about it last time, but I'm going to keep harping on it because I wonder if anybody else feels the same. But my sense of time in this show is so confused. Like, I know that they continue to be like, it's been 1 month since you've been seeing Aiden. Like, I appreciate this shout out, but I'd also like them to tell me what, like, month we're in, or, like, I just don't understand the point of how they're doing it on purpose. Like, they go out of their way to, like, include holidays and stuff. Like, they want us to notice the markers of time, but they don't do a good job of doing much else than that. And it just feels like it confuses the whole thing. Whereas, like, in the previous, not to always talk about the specter of the previous show, but in the previous show, it's just sort of like time just sort of like passed. It wasn't really necessarily always dictated by, like, some sort of holiday or like seasons as much.
I was going to say that you bring up this point where this show wants to have it two ways. It wants to have a linear narrative where we are, you know, beholden to a calendar with seasons and holidays, but then it also wants to be able to tell the story it wants to tell and disregard that linear narrative. So there's a very, like, Pulp Fiction feel to things sometimes, and not in a good way. And the reason I say this is, like, I wonder, there are points where I wonder, like, for example, Miranda going back into the work world, like, did that not happen earlier than Valentine's Day? Because she would be starting a semester in, like, an internship, the way it usually works. You know, maybe I've been gone from the intern life a little too long. But the way I remember it working is that you start an internship at the beginning of a semester or a summer break. You are not just kind of jumping in when the plot line feels like it should work. And maybe that's me asking too much out of this show.
Well, it's like, I can forgive that. It's more so I just don't understand. Like, they want it, like you said, they want it both ways. They want it linear, but they also want to do whatever they want. So, like, I think a good example, there are two examples, but one from the first season was Miranda making this whole big thing about going to Cleveland with Che, right? And then we never see her in Cleveland with Che, and it's, like, barely even talked about.
Right.
So you want Miranda to, like, make these big gestures, but we never get to see the payoff, but we're supposed to come along the ride emotionally. And that's really difficult if there's not going to be, like, a payoff, or we're not going to, like, hear what happened. And also from, like, a friendship standpoint, there that you usually talk about that. Like, I don't really, like, there's no way where you wouldn't really hear a glimmer of this conversation. And they do it with the Aiden farm thing where, like, they build up this, like, Norfolk, like, farm situation, and then she leaves, and then we don't fucking see it. No. And I just feel like that's so shitty. And then even his ex-wife, it's like she comes to the city. I'm like, what is the point then? Then who cares if he has a farm or not? It doesn't matter. We don't see it.
Yeah, I think. And the other thing is time jumps in weird places here. So like
by the time we're living in the future and the past at the same time.
So we end that episode where Carrie is going to go to the farm in Norfolk. And then in the next episode, it's like she's visited multiple times at this point. Like what? I don't know.
It's unclear how many times.
It's very unclear.
And I don't really get what the point of that is. Like then don't talk about it at all. Like I don't know what I'm supposed to be gleaning from anything, but I guess maybe we're just overthinking it and we should just like Tenet, I should just let the show wash over me. And I should just say like, there are no rules here and nothing matters. And then maybe I could let go of a little bit of this, like, I need to understand where we are and how much time has elapsed.
Well, the reason I think it's so jarring is because even if people have been together, engaged at one point, lived together, 13 years, you know, starting to date again someone 20 years later is not when someone has children in the mix, an ex-wife in the mix, and is long distance with the, you know, those kids are living elsewhere. No one is going to jump into this that quickly. Like it doesn't seem that this whole jumping into things is being done to further this plot, to strain, you know, emphasize the strain and stress over whether or not this relationship's going to work or if it's doomed from the start because of how quickly they're jumping into it. But there's very little regard to what the reality would actually look like and what I think these characters would really do. And that is to say, Aiden can, you know, I do believe those articles that are saying that Carrie is Aiden's big, like I prescribe to that analogy. But at the same time, I just think that a nice, you know, father of three kids is who seems to be pretty involved in their life and all that is just not going to jump into these things so quickly. Like it just feels so jarring.
I don't know. I know a lot of divorced dads who have no fucking problem ditching their kids to go get swept up in a romance. That's not really what I necessarily have a problem with. I think it's more just along the line. Like, and plus his kids are like grown, or at least two of them are. One's 20, presumably out of the house. 17, he's either a freshman in college or he's about to graduate. The only one we have to worry about is this future school shooter, Wyatt, which we will get to in episode 9. I'm not letting that go because that kid creeps me out.
He does creep me out.
We should just start at the beginning of episode 8, which
yes.
So you brought it up already. So let's just start here because the whole central, I wouldn't say, maybe it is the theme of episode 8 is, was Big not the one? Was Big a big mistake?
Yes.
Which I don't know about you, but I obviously Big is not my guy. I am a very like Aiden first
always
time around. I really think she fucked that up. But you know, if I'm one of Carrie's friends, if I'm Miranda and she said that to me, I would have screamed into the ether because it's not about what I think or how I feel. You put all of us and yourself through all this drama and you finally get the man and then you want to turn around and do this revisionist history at me that he wasn't the one after you've been screeching for the last 25 plus years that he was the one? No. When you're sticking, like, you need to live in reality and not in, like, a stick down village. You need to be here on Earth.
I could see the plot of the first movie flashing before Miranda's eyes in that moment when Carrie had the audacity to go off of Miranda because she happened to not report back that she said something to Big that night and that this grown-ass man took some woman's words as the reason why he didn't show up to the wedding that day. First off,
I mean, how do you not, if you're Miranda, how do you not like immediately fly into a blackout rage and just be like, Carrie, get it together. Get your head out of your fucking ass. You didn't put us through years of emotional torture. You blamed your lack of wedding on me and we almost weren't friends. Like, and now you want to turn around and be like, oh, now that Big's been dead for one whole year, maybe he wasn't the one.
Yes.
Lady, I need you to like have some bread and calm down. Like that's what needs to happen. Oh,
yes.
But I know, I'm sorry to derail us just a little bit. What you said earlier about the way that stuff jumps around in time, because you said you brought up the first movie. sometimes I do feel like the show, this And Just Like That show, wants to act like it's a continuation of the movies.
Yes.
That is the biggest barrier for me of like the time and place sense, because it wants to treat it as if it's like a feature length. So you kind of like fuck with the timeline a lot. But this is a weekly television program that has you know, it's supposed to be 40 minutes long or whatever. So I just feel like they're trying to essentially and this was maybe what was bad about the first season. They were trying to take a script that didn't make it into a feature and turn it into episodes. Yes. And it feels like they're still pulling storylines from Sex and the City 3 and Sex and the City 4 that never happened and trying to like shove them into And Just Like That so nothing goes to waste. But sometimes you just got to like compost those fucking ideas and like move on. But I think that
I know.
I could see, especially when you just said it, I could see this being like was big mistake, like a big subplot of Sex and the City 3, the movie, should that have happened.
It makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense. And to be honest, if that conversation had been scripted for a movie, I bet you Samantha was supposed to be the character she had that conversation with and of not course. Miranda.
Oh, yeah. Because why would you – the audacity to have that conversation with Miranda.
I know. I
Again,
know.
She must be just dickmatized to the max in order for her to think that that was possible.
Yeah.
So a good idea.
So there's a couple of – because we have to – get updates on just how everyone in this universe is doing in an episode.
7,000 side characters. Let's get to them.
Let's get to it. So obviously we learn about how Airbnb laws work in New York City because of this stupid.
Well, the way that it's run, honestly, and especially by the end of like the ninth episode, like you can only have guests for 30 days, reminds me of my friend whose mom lives in like an active senior apartment building, and you can only have guests for like 30 days or else you could lose your apartment. That's what Che's like. I don't know how true that is to Hudson Yards, but that's the impression that I got. I was like, is Che like in an active seniors building? Like, what's happening?
To be fair, there's a law in New York, and it's probably it's like the tenancy laws where buildings, just like in San, you know, all of that. Yeah.
I'm sure they're different, like in every state because they're state regulated. So, but that was interesting. Not like I thought Aiden was overly suspicious in his like, oh, I'm Brad and she's Janet, like. But you know, you're obviously like not helping matters. I don't know why he's so. He is goofy, but like this is not a time to like be goofy.
It's just, I think they're like, that was just, I mean, it was, I feel like they needed a device to really, you know, seal the deal of their eviction. And it just, but it lands so weirdly. So as you mentioned earlier, we obviously have Aiden and Carrie are very happily in love. You know, she's been to Norfolk number of times, questionable. We don't know. And then has met the sons, and things are happening and it's, and things are moving along. And I think it's important to point out at this point that, you know, Carrie obviously has lunch because Charlotte and Miranda want to see Aiden and invite Seema. But in the process, Seema has forgotten about the house rental. Not Seema has forgotten about this. But in the process, Carrie has forgotten about the house rental that she and Seema had talked about doing in the Hamptons. And for me, I think this, again, this goes back to this show has this thing where I think they want Seema to be this really great character who happily lives this single life and has to and wants to showcase how oftentimes, you know, fulfilling single lives are neglected or like that friendships can be in a weird place when someone gets a partner, that kind of thing. But I think that they made Seema out to be way more not immature about it, but like I feel like they don't do the character of Seema enough justice in this plot line. I don't know how you feel.
Yeah. I think you and I talked about this a little bit, about like the way that Seema reacts when they're at brunch, which like I was happy to get like a good old fashioned brunch scene between all of them. So when she started acting passive aggressive, because I watched the episode a little bit later, I had had it like not necessarily spoiled, but like I had an idea of what was going to happen. So the way that she acted to me, I was just sort of like, okay, like I'm they're like laying down the groundwork for like this potential fight to set up. I don't know if I necessarily read it as immature. Like I could understand how it could come across that way, but I did really like their conversation in the rain where Seema like tries to avoid her at like a wash ball. I thought that that was really real because I think that it's hard to be like, I need to put myself first, especially like who would want to spend all summer with like a brand new, like loved up couple. Like that sounds super fucking annoying.
It does.
When you thought it was going to be like, you know, hot girl summer type stuff. Like it's a really hard shift. And especially when Carrie's like, he won't be there that much. I was like, oh my God, you know, he's going to be there 10 times more than you think he's going to be.
He's going to be there. Yeah.
And even if you are just alone with Carrie, you know, she's never going to shut the fuck up about this guy. So it's like, it's too soon. And it's not necessarily that Carrie has this great love of her life. I think it's just that Carrie's the type of girlfriend who just lets a relationship completely overtake her personality.
Yeah.
And for someone like Seema, who is so capital S single, maybe it's also like painful to watch your girl down bad like that, to like just sort of act a little bit like a loved up kind of fool. And who, again, who, if when you had your expectation at single girl summer and then you had it thwarted by like ex-fiance I'm like madly in love with again, that's not the summer I signed up for. And I think so many people would have paid money and been fucking miserable in the Hamptons and just swallowed it. And that would have ultimately ruined their friendship, not Seema canceling it. And also, you know, the line about Carrie being like, oh, I don't care about the deposits. Like, yes, we know you're rich. Jesus.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
You can afford a late cancel fee. But again, that's not the point. That like, Carrie is just so self-centered. And I kind of love when she has these like classic friendship disagreements where it really kind of like comes out, like how she just really sometimes doesn't get the point. Like her freaking out that Seema wants space. She's like, no, it means more space. Like, no, you dumbass. It means that if you guys are on this trip together, she's going to murder you. And then you guys are never really going to be friends again. So just like, leave her alone. Stop like pushing Aiden on her. I hate that kind of shit.
No. And I agree with that too. I think that I don't know. It's like this show, again, it's very much finally this show has given us the angle of how the rest of the world sees Carrie, whereas Carrie's behavior was not totally always checked in the original show. And in this show gets checked by waiters, checked by.
I mean, I think still my favorite episode is the episode with the guy from Urgent Care from Younger, where everybody openly fucking hates Carrie for like 30 minutes straight. And she just keeps being like, oh, okay, yeah, I deserve that. Oh, sure, yes, no, fuck me. Okay, got it, yes. Like that was probably one of the funniest episodes they'd had in a very long time. And that's one of my favorite episodes of like this new era. But yeah, I do like the open disdain for Carrie's just selfishness. So I think that's hysterical. That's why I was like so surprised that we learned in this episode that she'd met Aiden's kid like a couple of times. I'm like, oh, and they didn't like scream at you?
Yeah, seriously. The other thing. Aiden,
I'd like that footage, please.
Yes. And then the other thing that happens with Seema, because I feel like we should just close it because it's hard to like come back to these people and, you know, too many people. So meanwhile, Seema, in terms of her professional life, she is working on a house, or she's propositioned by her business partner to help this very famous film director who's looking for a temporary rental, and her business partner is also urging her to date this guy, which I think we're led to believe he's like a Marvel director, but he's got street cred in the directing world. But like many directors out there in real life has, you know, gone on to make Marvel movies because they make more money. And so that's kind of the end of that. We'll put a pin on that one for now, because it's going to come back in the next episode. But all of this to say, there's very much an enemies to lovers vibe going on, which we will see the rest of in the next episode.
And usually I love a enemies to lovers, like book, plot line, movie, all of that. I don't know if it's like the actor or the way that it's written. Like, I know that he's trying to be like a Taika Waititi like knockoff, but I, every time this dude's on screen, I'm like, ugh. Like, you know? I really cannot buy into it, but we'll see if they win me over, but they don't by the end of the ninth episode. So I think Sima can do better personally.
I agree. I think Sima is one of the characters that has been added to the show that I adore. And I just, yeah.
What about
I think
the ghost of Dr. Naya?
And of course, the ghost of Dr. Naya.
Completely absent from episode 8. And I know it's because she was simultaneously filming another insane the morning show. So she wasn't always available. And it kind of makes sense why all of her scenes kind of like happen literally like in a silo of her bedroom or just her apartment. Cause they're probably just like, oh, she's here for like the day. Like, what can we possibly shoot with just her since everyone's wrapped already?
It's giving to, you know, harken back to our episode where we interviewed Stu Krieger. It's giving Nebula in the scene on Zequel where she's off to some random like a school or like studying abroad in the galaxy or something like that.
Yeah, it's giving Kim Cattrall zooming in for a scene, but she's not actually acting against anybody because she doesn't want to.
We will definitely talk more about Naya in the next episode, but
he's actually in the next episode.
Yes, I feel like it has like a full-fledged plot line. So our two
full-fledged plot line, sorry, is kind of excessive
for this show. We
she
have to call her that
in the next episode, just featured.
This episode has a huge emphasis on our two gals going back to work. So we've got Charlotte going back to work in the art galleries after being out for, you know, decades at this point to raising her kids. And then we've got Miranda going to work for like the human rights nonprofit and both of them are dealing with some insecurities about things. So I guess we can start with Charlotte because it's kind of the dumbest thing. And it's Michael Patrick King in a nutshell, really, which is that she goes to start an art gallery job. But she's very self-conscious about her body because, you know, apparently she has a stomach. Oh, my God. And there's this whole thing about the skinny belt, which is so fucking annoying. I couldn't stop rolling my eyes. And then at the end, though, it's okay because there's someone in the art gallery, her manager, her manager at the art gallery is plus sized and therefore it's okay. But because what should have been in a moment, which was clearly written to be, you and I talked about this, Charlotte embracing the fact that all bodies are beautiful, like people here are wearing what they want to wear and they look fabulous. Instead, it comes across as, at least I'm not that size, so I can wear whatever I want to wear. And that is, for me, was when I see the Michael Patrick King credit on this episode, I can't help but think this is him. This is him.
I mean,
this is him.
This is the most 90s in a bad way plot line. You know, like when they brought back this show and they're like, everybody's going to be diverse and it's going to tell stories and we're going to have body acceptance. And like, we're going to do it totally different because we're going to right the wrongs, except this one. It's like, and it feels very dated and it feels like a boomer person who's not a woman's perspective on how women feel when they get older. And I have to say, I mean, like, it's like some of it is like, I think I was okay with honestly all of this plot line up until when Charlotte is like, she shoved herself into like 83 pairs of Spanx and she goes out of breath to go talk to her fucking ungrateful asshole children. And then she waddles her ass over to the studio and she looks at herself and she finally takes off that stupid belt that was hideous to begin with and that you did not fucking need. And I don't know why these like tiny belts were ever a trend. I hate them. Put them all in a garbage can and light them on fire. And she meets the two gallery girls that what I think the generous read of this is that Charlotte thought that everybody at the gallery was going to be like these like skinny ingenues and that she was going to have another like chauvinistic art gallery man who values beauty. And, you know, she's not that young anymore and all this other stuff. And so I think that's what they were trying to say. But instead, what they end up saying is the, and instead of Charlotte being empowered by having like a female art gallery manager who also like loves herself and like is so welcoming and accepting to Charlotte, it comes across because of the way that it's edited and the way that it's presented that Charlotte sees a plus size woman welcoming her and accepting herself, and she immediately rips off her Spanx because she feels better about herself, because she's just like,
yes,
oh well, I could, it could be worse, I could be fatter, I could be this,
yes,
because she looks like some average between ingenue gallery girl and like, you know, oh thank god I'm not that fat manager girl, like she feels more comfortable with herself. But I think the generous read is that she feels so welcomed and this yes. is like a new era and women can be themselves and they don't need to be like cinched and plucked and blah blah blah. But it doesn't come off that way because it doesn't have a fresh touch, and it's also not written by someone who shares that experience.
I think one of the things you said earlier, that they're trying to right a lot of wrongs on this show. They're trying to update a whole lot of things. Mm-hmm. And because they do it in just about every other department, some in
that's
better
why
ways
it's
than
so
others,
annoying that they didn't
that's
do this
why
here.
It's even more glaring. Like it's that's so why annoying. It's so annoying and such a glaring oversight on their end, because they have made this effort to do it in every other department, that this plotline feels, I would almost rather them try not to write some of the wrongs that they're trying to write, not as well as they could have, and have done this scene better than to try to, you know, incorporate a person, you know, that fits every critique of this, the criticism the show has faced over the years and how it's aged in terms of having strictly white cisgender actresses portraying the main four roles.
Well, yeah, we somehow still have plot lines with Che as a vet tech, which I fucking do not fucking care about.
I know.
At all. Like, every time we are transported to those scenes, I immediately am like, why am I here? What are we doing here? I don't care.
Che
couldn't give fucking Carrie a call and just be like, being a vet tech's cool. That's all I need to know. I don't need any other insight.
At this point, again, a waste of a great actor in Sarah Ramirez to have these half-assed plot lines just to keep Che on this show, in a character that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I have a feeling, based on the previews for the next episodes, there's going to be an attempt between them and Miranda, where Miranda might try to get back with them. I don't know. I wonder.
No, in that case, I do hope that Che fucks that Toby person who dropped off that box of kittens. But yes, I will forever hate Toby for making Che think, oh, I should do more stand-up. I'm so fucking mad that we're going to be subjected to that. But speaking of Che with their ex Miranda,
yes,
she's still a dum-dum. I don't understand what's happening.
Absurd.
Did Miranda have a lobotomy that removed the part of her brain that remembers that she was a fucking working lawyer for 30 years? What is happening? You're not an intern. You're in your 50s.
There is so much. The only person in this office who looks sane is Reyna, the manager, who is
pregnant. The pregnant lady?
Yes. Everybody else is just like, the two other interns are Gen Z stereotypes that are very poorly written, where we've got them like texting one another because they're so for context, Miranda gets an internship. Her co-interns are, needless to say, probably law school age, so early 20s.
It's important to point out that it's a human rights organization,
because
in case you forgot, like I did, Miranda's whole thing for going back
to school. She's a nonprofit
girly
now. She's a nonprofit girly.
That's what she wants
girly.
To do. She wants to do pro bono work, which, again, begs the question, if you're going to do pro bono work, don't you have enough money to not live with Dr. Naya, where you can listen to her get railed constantly and like not use the bathroom? Do we have money? Do we not have money? Like, in the words, Emily, in the words of John Taffer, let's bust open the books, baby, because
let's
math has not been mathing.
I know.
The time has not been timing, and it makes me kind of crazy.
It makes me kind of crazy on many different levels. One, there seems to be this constant plot line this season where Miranda just can't fucking go to the bathroom. Like, she goes on a date with an audiobook narrator where a cat is guarding the bathroom. And then, because Naya is off banging her Tinder slampies in her bedroom, and one bathroom is in the bedroom. Poor Miranda is just standing there.
How does Miranda not have a UTI by now? You're so right. What are we doing to Miranda? Why can't she use a bathroom?
And then between that and then the potential bed bug situation by almost buying a used mattress.
I almost forgot about the bed bugs. I'm so upset. How dare you?
And then the like going back and forth between homes, like Miranda.
Like a hobo. Yeah. I don't like she's just packing up her little bindle, tying it to her stick and being like, I'm going to take the subway.
Her brain and her urinary tract are just in pieces at this point. It is. I just worry.
Why would they let her use the bathroom? It's my question.
I like, what did Cynthia Nixon do to these people?
Did she blow up a porta potty or something? Like, why are we mad at Miranda? Why are we mad at Cynthia Nixon?
I don't like, this is a woman who very competently ran for governor of New York
and won a primary.
She was a serious contender.
Exactly. And if she won, would she even be on this show?
No. I feel
you know that there's like an alternate, there's another Matrix reality where you and I aren't even talking about this show because it never happened because she's the governor or whatever.
No, and it's one of those things where sometimes I wonder if it would have been better that way. Like, I'm excited to revisit these characters. I'm excited to see portrayals of women in their 50s, but really at what cost, right? Like,
exactly. At least
the alternate universe where Greta Gerwig, How I Met Your Father pilot didn't get greenlit, we get Barbie, we get Lady Bird, and we get Little Women and all sorts of great things. Like, in this alternate universe, It would have been so much better for Cynthia Nixon. Now it's urinary tract infections, lobotomies, and terrible tattoos. Like, it's just.
And don't forget the cat shit date.
The cat shit date. There's like, does anyone love me right now? Because your son, ex-partner, and ex-husband all hate you at this point. Like, there's just. Miranda has not been has only really been an asshole to Steve in this situation, and yet honestly, not get the asshole treatment that Carrie merits at this point.
I genuinely worry for Miranda's safety. Like, I hope, like, they might as well just let her get hit by a car at this point, the way that they treat her character.
What if
after a Chase comedy concert she gets mowed down by a car? And not even like a nice car, like some crappy Camry. Not like all Camrys are crappy, but like, you know, something like that.
To reel it back in.
Yes. Miranda apparently had a lobotomy on the part of her brain that contained the information that she was a corporate lawyer for 30 years.
She doesn't need to
debase herself and compete with fucking 20-somethings and act dumber than she is to make sure that she fits in. Like, just don't eat the fucking garlic chocolate chip cookie, which sounds gross, by the way, as somebody who always doubles the amount of garlic in a recipe.
There's
a time and place for garlic on almost anything but a chocolate chip cookie. So that's
not on a chocolate chip cookie.
Red flag number one that these girlies are trying to fuck with you. I genuinely thought they were trying to fuck with her immediately. I was like, oh, is that like a shit cookie? Like, what are you trying to do to my girl? Like, Miranda is never cool, but that was just mean.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
So it was, so needless to say, she's been dealing with conflicts at work because these 24, 25-year-old interns are not happy that surprise, Miranda's getting more opportunities because she actually has the experience of being a fucking lawyer. And in this portrayal, weird portrayal of Gen Z interns, we have a scene in which their frustration about and jealousy around Miranda's opportunities gets to be so weird, at which they're sitting at a lunch table eating their sweet green. And you just see the two girls, the two other interns, are clearly texting one another and snickering. And they have the sound on their keyboards. So they have the sound on their keyboards and on their notifications so that there is
fake.
No.
That's so fake. No one planet. Under the age of 52 has the fucking sound on their phone.
No, that is the biggest hate crime of this.
And the
episode.
Least Gen Z fucking thing I've ever seen in my life.
No, they would never. And so we have this whole thing where Miranda's getting these opportunities. These interns are pissed. And thank God for someone having a brain at this nonprofit pro bono law firm, because Raina sets her straight and is like, listen, Miranda, you fucking practiced law for 30 years. Sorry that I'm giving you more opportunities because you actually know how to take notes and do shit. Like, so in the end, Miranda is set to cover Raina while she is on maternity leave. And I think we can just leave it at that because it's just so frustrating.
There's no follow up.
There's no follow up.
We don't check back in. I mean, maybe that's not to say we won't, because maternity leave, I don't know, in this country, maybe Raina's going to be back in like 6 weeks. But let's just say Raina's out for a couple of months and Miranda is taking over in that time. Maybe we will check back in, but not in the next episode.
No. The only other things we want to cover are going to be around Anthony learning that Giuseppe, his very hot poet employee, is gay and is clearly very interested in being with Anthony. And Anthony is ready to fire him because he is very attracted to him. And that's been probably the most fun plot line of this season. I got to say, I've really enjoyed it. It's harkened back to so many like fun things about this show. Like, it's really the only thing that I've enjoyed. Like, Anthony is really giving us the Samantha here, because that is a Samantha plot line if I've ever heard of one, where like, yes, I just like, I've had so much fun with the Anthony Giuseppe plot line.
Well, wasn't there a Samantha plot line where she fired a guy so she could fuck him?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And so I could see this happening like an opposite effect just once, where like Miranda or like, sorry, Samantha would do like they flipped the switch on her for the show if she had been on the show.
I'm also just glad that Anthony's gonna get banged have like a romance or something, because they've really just like dumped on this guy.
I mean, they
for
Brian,
most of the season
they fast and furious Willie Garson, which I get it, like there was already another death on the show, like a fictional
that's not,
death.
I don't have a problem with any of that. I just feel like Anthony, just this whole season, he was invited and uninvited to the Met like more times than is reasonable. He's had like his business in jeopardy. He like kind of turned Charlotte into a recruiter, you know. He just hasn't had like a lot of fun, and I feel like he's a very fun character, so I'm glad that he's gonna like have this relationship with this younger man and have it be a little fun and flirty and sell some bread.
I think that's a nice segue into the next episode, unless you have anything else you want to cover from episode 8.
No, we talked about all of it, other than Seema's last look when she goes to dinner to meet Aiden is I love that.
She has probably my favorite outfits on the show. Yes. Like I really, really like Seema's outfits.
She dresses the way I think I should dress, but probably couldn't pull off.
Agreed. I hope that I'm that fabulous, you know, at any point in my life.
If anybody would like that to happen currently, that'd be great.
Great. I would fully appreciate it.
Wish I could afford a daily blowout for my hair. That seems extremely expensive.
So I think Let's continue on the Anthony and Giuseppe of it all for
sure, because it's very short.
It
could be summed up thusly.
Yes.
They make allusions, or at least Giuseppe actually says my favorite line of probably the entire And Just Like That run, which is 7 dates and no dick. That's not very how you say gay. That was extremely funny.
Someone clearly loves Hilaria Baldwin enough.
What was, did you say not very gay?
Cucumber.
But I thought that was really funny. But it starts out with Giuseppe calls Anthony Tony. He can be Tony to Giuseppe's Maria. He tells Maria to go fuck off. He pretends that he can't invite him up because of his ex and like the landlord is spy. Like Anthony just has every excuse in the world, right?
He thinks it's a green card marriage.
Well, Anthony had my second favorite line of the whole show when he tells Carrie, I know that Giuseppe wants a green card. I've watched all 35 seasons of 90 Day Fiancé. I was like, me too. He doesn't. So it was also really funny to have the reveal that Giuseppe's mom is from Buffalo.
I really was hoping he'd say Buffalo.
But I was very pleased to see then they immediately have sex in Lily's bedroom. And that serves Lily right, because Lily can go fuck herself because every kid on the show is a nightmare.
Well, I'm sorry. Now we got to, speaking of Lily can go fuck herself, we got to bring it up. So,
well, I have to say, I don't care. So I'm glad that there was a de-emphasis on Brady and Lily having sex and more about what that means for Charlotte and Miranda. I liked the Charlotte and Miranda team up. Me too. Even though them going to a Chipotle was like, wow.
How far might he have fallen?
I mean, I know.
Freaking girls.
I mean, I know that, you know, Miranda fucks with like a pret-a-manger or whatever. Like she's that kind of girl. But it was really funny to see her
even
do
the
her
orders.
Like, Mr. Magoo routine at fucking Chipotle, like, oh, I'll try the plant-based stuff instead of the steak. I'm like, oh my God.
Miranda would never. This like no rice plant-based, like Miranda Hobbs Esquire would never. Queen of a salad, a hot bar salad.
Chicken wings. Miranda Hobbs, formerly Brady, formerly Che Pasa, Hobbs again, intern. And I guess intern Miranda Hobbs, formerly Brady, formerly Che Pasa, now currently again Hobbs. It's the plant-based option at Chipotle. Oh, but the no rice is the smart move. Sorry, it's just filler. I don't have a problem with that. But so I will say, as much as I was dreading your premonition coming correct, because I thought that it would mean that we would have like more scenes with these kids, I was really pleasantly surprised that we didn't.
Yes.
So I'll take that. Because I thought
I will take that too,
talking about it was funny. I really liked Charlotte talking about it with Harry and Harry being like, oh, then we get like, maybe we get Miranda's like a mother-in-law. And Charlotte's like, oh, she'd be a nightmare. And I just thought it was so fucking funny.
But I just, it's so, yes.
I thought that was really good. I loved them like spying on the on Brady and Lily in the kitchen, because it was a way to involve the kids, but then I don't have to hear them speak or act like dicks. And okay with that.
This show has never done enough with Miranda and Charlotte's friendship, which I think is a disservice, because I think that in real life, Kristen Davis and Cynthia Nixon are actually quite close. Like, I think of the cast members, I think they are pretty close. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that it's the only time I can remember them having a few like episodes together or plot lines is in the second movie where they're comparing being mothers. And that's like really it. And it's unfortunate because I think that they are very funny together. And I do, to your point, really enjoyed how they handled this plot line, even if I didn't like the plot itself actually happening. I do think that they were very funny about it. I'm glad that we had the focus on the two of them versus the kids. And we didn't have too much time with the kids, which I
know, but I do share in Carrie's sentiment when Miranda and Charlotte tell her like, oh, Brady and Lily had sex. She's like, that's like hearing my stuffed animals had sex. And then she immediately disassociates. <She's> like, like, geez, no. And that's like the correct response. But it was interesting to have. So I have a couple of questions for you. Well, a comment and then a couple of questions for you in the lead up to Lily and Brady having sex, because Miranda is giving Brady like a hard time about how he's not in college. And then she says like a really elitist thing about like, oh, you can't just like make fries your whole life, which I was like, yeah, yes, he can. That's fine. There's like such a de-emphasis on the value of just having a job. Like a job for a job's sake. Like not everything is your fucking passion. Sometimes a job is just a fucking job. And I think it's such a valuable skill when everybody just wants to be an influencer. Sorry to sound like I'm 1 million years old, but I just feel like, having a job is fine. Like he's just going to make french fries. What's the problem?
What's the problem? The other thing I think it's kind of rich of all this is that his own father was a bartender. Like, good God. You know what I mean?
Well, you remember what a big problem she had with that anyway.
With that. Yeah. And I'm like, you clearly got over that over time. I mean, part of it is probably because Steve ended up owning a bar with Aiden, which I have no resolution. I have so many questions.
And no mention. No mention of Aiden. Like, it's so like, do they even know each other anymore? Like, what? What?
Did he they sell were his friends. Shit? They were business partners. Never forget.
How would Carrie even have weaseled her way in the second time if they didn't have that fucking bar together and she didn't bring up that dumbass plant?
Okay. Oh my God.
Yes, I know. Oh, like, this show has like amnesia sometimes, and we're all
it
like,
it really does.
The North remembers. Like, come on. But my other question is Brady Rain Man? Because Miranda like keeps making these little jokes like, you're so smart at math. Like, you just did all of that in your head. Like, is he Rain Man? Is that what she's getting at?
I don't think Brady is Rain Man. I think that Miranda is a typical like mother of a boy. You know what I mean? Like those like
totally
insufferable boy mothers.
Right. Like, oh my God, he ties his shoes like so good. You're like, yes. He's 46.
No. And keep in mind, I say this with love to all my friends who have sons. I am not talking about you. I am talking about a generation of women who just
anybody that knows I should know we're not talking about them. We're just making casual observances, especially, you know, as people who now know adult men who definitely have had their mommies tell them that they do a good job at everything, even though
everything. Yes.
But
yes.
So that was my main comment about Brady. But then my other comment was, so Lily hasn't hung out with him since the ski trip where she alluded to him basically like jerking off the whole time.
I also, in this world where they live in New York City, yes, Miranda is across the bridge, but they are still in the greater New York City area. On what planet has it been that Brady and Lily have not seen each other in over however many years at this point? Like, I don't know about you, but growing up, like, my parents' best friends, I'm going to see their kids all the time. We're basically daycare to one another. Like, if my parents are going to go have dinner with one another, like, we're, you know, somewhere in the background with a sitter. Like, I don't know. It felt weird. But maybe I'm asking too much of this show from an accuracy standpoint.
I just want to know if she was alluding to Brady jerking off on that ski.
Well could be. Wouldn't be surprised.
But was there anything else from this other than Miranda again is being denied bathroom access?
Well, that's a great segue into Dr. Naya's love life or sex life, where she's like having sex with like what seems to be a mid-20s Fabio type. Like, he's just got this hair. You know, it's to the point where it's clearly affecting Miranda's urinary tract, because we find out that the bathroom in this one-bedroom apartment is in the master. But what we do find out, though, is that in the midst of Naya having this carefree sex, one time she does see on her phone that, in fact, her ex Andre is now having a baby, the baby he wanted, with his new girlfriend.
Well, I'd like to point out the girlfriend is the backup singer that he told her he wasn't going to cheat on her yet with.
Yes.
So that adds another, like, I would say, layer to things where you're like,
yes.
No matter how well you're doing, you'd be like, wow.
Yes.
You're a piece of shit. I don't know how you don't have that reaction. But I mean, it's just Naya having carefree Tinder sex with a total himbo. And she doesn't even have to pretend that she cares about him in any sort of way. And I feel like, I don't know, I feel like they haven't really had any sexy sex stuff in a really long time. So I guess I'm glad to see it. But in that scene too, I really felt like, especially because Naya literally doesn't interact with anybody else in the cast, I'm like, I feel like her stuff now has now usurped Lisa Todd Wexley in the sort of like silo of like, you're on a different show, I think.
Yes, agreed. And by the way, Margot, I have a question for you. Did you know that Lisa Todd Wexley is a documentary filmmaker?
You know what I want to talk about? Her office setup. They're very rich. Why does she work on that tiny, tiny laptop inside of like her closet? I mean, look, I'm not one to talk. I'm currently recording from inside of my closet, but I'm not rich. That is my counterpoint.
The other thing is just like, if space is an issue, like all the bedrooms are taken up by kids because they've got three kids. I get it. And they're in an apartment in New York City. Three.
Okay.
They've got
there's
they've
Herbert got, Jr., the little girl, and the Gabby. Bonus?
I think there's like a little one. I think a little boy. Maybe I'm making that up. I think there's three. Because what
it kind anyway. Of doesn't really matter, but
it doesn't really matter. But all of this is to say, if space is at a premium in their New York City apartment, like they have the money for her to like be at a WeWork or a coffee shop. You know, there's just like so many other options here where like she is not at home in her closet working off of what looks like a vanity. Like, let's call
I know.
It what
I
it
just
is.
I was like, leave that for us. You know, that's how we yeah. work. We don't want to yeah. see this. I just think it's yeah. so funny because every time, like the like her being passed out at her desk, I'm like, how? Like spatially, how?
I know. I know. And then the cliffhanger is, speaking of children, we may not know how many they have at this very moment, but they are soon to be the parents of another child, because we leave the episode with Lisa informing Herbert at his fundraiser at the Golden Blotts house that she is pregnant.
Yeah, even though I know some people had problems like with Harry throwing this fundraiser, I'm like, no, we need more of this kind of stuff. It's sort of like
yes.
the Housewives, like we need an all cast party. We all cast yes. needs, like everybody needs to show up to this thing because I need to see everybody interacting with yes. each other. And
yes.
that's what needs to happen a little bit more to kind of make this feel like, bring all these like disparate plots to like a central location.
And speaking of Harry, he thinks that Charlotte's boss is into Charlotte, which is just.
This feels very out of character because Harry's never yeah. struck me as a particularly no. jealous person.
Never. Never.
And him being like, no. you're working late. I'm like, I don't really think that he would react like that. I don't know. I found it odd and convenient.
I missed the goofball a few episodes ago, dressing up with his American wig.
Can we give him the wig back? Can we get the wig? Honestly, if him becoming jealous means that he puts the wig back on to spy on Charlotte at work, I will let all of this go.
I'll let it go too. That's that. And then there's a conversation with Carrie and Mark Kasabian, where
you mean Victor Garber?
Victor Garber's character's name is Mark Kasabian.
Oh, which, sorry. In my notes, I just write, Victor Garber's back. I don't know.
Victor Garber's back. So there's a conversation with them where, you know, there's glimmer of Harry's, of Carrie's grief, which, you know, this season has done kind of over again, which in some ways I like when it's done well, which is to show that grief is not just a period. It is like a gradual thing that continues in your life and you're never like fully done with it.
And is also something that is not linear, which the show is obsessed with.
Exactly. But it's just, I don't know. we've covered a lot of the plot lines except for, we got to talk about, let's end it on Carrie and Aiden. So we'll talk sure. quickly about Che because Che might have a love interest
again.
Yes.
Well, yeah, the Toby character. But before we get into all of that though, one thing I like don't really understand the point of why it continues to happen is in episode 8, Che goes over to Che's apartment while Aiden and Carrie are there and they're all giggly and Carrie's acting so out of character. She's like opening beer bottles on like the countertop and Che's like, oh, why didn't this work out? And they're all like cagey and then they smooch. And then Che surprises Carrie with a kitten, which was very funny because Carrie is like the least likely person to ever have an animal because I could not imagine her taking care of anybody else, barely even herself. Che asks again, like, why Aiden can't be in this apartment. And Carrie gives another like vague, like, did we have a lot of hurt memories and hurt people? And like, so why do we keep, why does Che keep asking this stupid fucking question? And are we ever going to tell Che? And if we're not, can we just like forget about this? Because it's so bizarre.
I just find the whole
approach to it to be strange. I don't know why we're not forthcoming.
I'm so glad you bring this up because for a woman who has spent her career writing about her love and sex life, it has to have come up. It's come up that she's cheated. She cheated on Aiden with Big. It has to have come up. It did come up in the book, the original book that she writes in the show. So why on earth is she being so vague and cagey with Che when it is on fucking public record that she cheated on Aiden with Big? Like, Che can go to any bookstore and they can buy that book, pick it up, and just find out for themselves. Like, this, it's weird because, again, the show Amnesia doesn't serve itself here, because it leaves everyone kind of bewildered as to why Carrie continues to act this way.
Or why you're even making Che say this stuff. Like, if this is the reaction you want Carrie to have, what is Che even getting out of this?
I don't know. And it's just, it's annoying. I hate that we're finding new ways to keep Che into this plot when it just doesn't make sense. And again, bad use of a really good actor. I can't stress this enough. I think it angers me time and time again, because they've screwed the pooch on so many fronts when it comes to Che, no pun intended, with their recent job. But yeah, it's just been, it's annoying. And now we might get another stand-up set. Spare us, please.
Yeah, I wrote my notes like, I'm on my knees begging you, please, no more Che storylines. No one cares about Che's stand-up career. Just leave it alone. And I mean, now that Carrie and Aiden are moving out of Che's apartment and Che can afford to live in Hudson Yards again, it's like, what do we even, there's no universe where you think, where you could convince me to think that Carrie would keep in touch with any old coworker, especially one that broke up with her friend.
We ditched Bobby Lee a couple of episodes ago.
Thank God. Honestly, if ditching Bobby Lee means more Che, then fine. I'm fine with that, I guess, if those are the two options. But anyway, back to Carrie and Aiden and their real estate conundrum, or I guess Carrie's real estate conundrum, since I'm not really sure how much, like, financially Aiden's going to be chipping into all of this. But what I think is extremely funny is that Carrie brings Miranda, who is ostensibly homeless, to this gorgeous, immaculate, giant, beautiful four-bedroom townhouse, and basically goes, look, you can't live here.
This is the theme of this whole episode. So this happens it happens with Miranda. And then, to add fuel to the fire, at the end of this episode, we've got Carrie coming, you know, strolling up the steps of her apartment, where she runs into her younger jewelry designer neighbor, whose name I've forgotten because there's just too many people to remember here.
I'm like, and Luce or something.
Luce tells us that she is being evicted from her home. And Carrie's basically just like, oh man, sucks. That really sucks. And as she walks into her apartment that she has not even put on the market just yet, rather than, I don't know, doing the thing that a rich older lady could do in this situation, which is to rent this apartment out to her younger friend and let her keep her life in New York.
Well, I think that there's a lot of speculation that Carrie is going to ultimately let her live there, because why else would you bring it up?
And in a new chapter of, like,
right, exactly. So
that
I really think that's what's going to happen. And I don't know if that's going to interfere with her relationship with Aiden, or if it really is going to be a new chapter or what. But also, I think I feel for Luce and her stolen goods from the season premiere, or however many episodes that was.
It's kind of rough.
I feel for her and everything, but it's not really an eviction if you were subleasing. It's like, these guys are just moving back to their apartment.
Yeah, no. I mean, I use the word eviction very
lightly. No. Here, I'm saying this to her.
Yes, that's fair. That's fair. So obviously we see Carrie, because they've been evicted from Che's apartment, Carrie and Aiden are looking for a new place. Carrie finds this place that Seema shows her. She's on board. And along the way, though, we can't forget that we get to get a glimpse of one of Aiden's children, who, Wyatt, on FaceTime, who may or may not be responsible for some mass violence in the next couple of years. Like, I don't want to put that out there. We do not condone violence on this show. But
just like that could handle such a serious topic to begin with. But it wasn't until Carrie has coffee with Aiden's ex, Kathy, And Kathy calls Wyatt, quote, our special little puzzle. I was like, wow, that's scary. No. That's scary if your parents even calling you that. But
what you say on the Dateline special.
That's literally what I texted the group chat. I was like, this is a future Dateline episode happening right before our eyes. But my first thought was immediately on the FaceTime was like, why does everyone on the show have a shithead kid? Why does this show have such a low regard for children? Like, do they all have to be little dicks? I mean, not like they even need to be pleasant. But remember when this show used to never, like, barely even acknowledge that these women had families? Like, I can count on one hand how many times they've acknowledged their past families.
There is,
and one of them was the Miranda's mom died episode. But you don't really find out anything. So I just find that to be interesting. Like, then leave the kids out of it.
I think at this point, it's just gotten... Whenever we try to introduce a new kid into the mix, it ends up being like just one extra level of painfulness, like that's inflicted upon all of us, or one level of pain that is inflicted upon all of us. So we meet this kid who is probably, you know, making a murder over here. and we also get to meet Aiden's ex-wife, played by Rosemary DeWitt, who I thought was actually great casting. Like, she strikes me as definitely the woman Aiden would have married. She's in textiles. Like, I get the vibe totally. And in, you know, so the meeting between the two of them goes pretty well. It's, you know, I guess they met in Norfolk, at least that's what we're told. And then after that, we get from Aiden's ex that kind of two things. One, she knows that Carrie is a writer and she does not want any mention of her boys in the future material that she writes, which is obviously setting up a plot line. You know, there's no other reason.
Or maybe not. The show picks and chooses what it wants to pay off.
That's very true.
So it's hard. I think it's really difficult to ever even be like, ooh, like that setup, or like, ooh, I could see this happening, because they could just turn around and be like, fuck you. That's not what's happening. But I think that it's fair. Like, Carrie has made money off of writing about her personal life for 30 some odd years, and suddenly becoming a stepmother to, or, you know, ostensibly a stepmother to three sons when you've been a famously single gal, and especially considering their history and all of that, that provides a whole new well of material that you can tap into, a whole new audience you haven't reached yet. So I totally understand why Rosemary DeWitt would say this to her.
Yes. And then the second thing that comes up in this conversation is that Rosemary DeWitt warns Carrie to not hurt Aiden, which, you know, again,
this just falls under the everyone hates Carrie umbrella, I think. Like, everybody knows what's up with her.
which obviously, again, like, the show will decide what it wants to do with everything that comes out of it. But
I just think it's hard to predict, because
it's
like,
very hard to predict.
We all thought we were going to see the farm, then boom, go fuck yourself, no farm. Like, I just feel like there are just some things that you think are going to pay off and then they just don't. And I just
they don't.
This show is harder to like theorize about than like Westworld ever was.
So yeah. And Carrie is really not supposed to talk to Aiden about that latter point, but she does bring it up when she sees Aiden next time, because she's Carrie. And you know,
see asshole.
And the two of them seem to be in this position where everything seems to be right. They are looking to start this new chapter in this new home. Carrie decides to buy the place. Yada, yada, yada. I mean, there's like nothing.
I mean,
really
that house, though.
Yeah.
I mean, holy crap. Like, what? I know. Like, that's my Barbie dream house.
Gorgeous too.
Place. Beautiful. And like, you know, when you live in Gramercy Park, you gain access to like the park itself, because it's only for those residents. And
so I've been in it. Ugh. It's incredible. So I, years ago when I was in New York, this is when I had, you know, as a 20 something, I was singing in an a cappella group in DC, and the, you know, different age people in the group. So we were like ages 22 to like 42. And one of the people I was friends with in the group, who was in her 30s probably at the time, was double income, no kids, and so she had this amazing life. And we got to stay in the Gramercy Park Hotel, and it was this incredible experience, you know, because you got the key. and we got to see the park, and it was beautiful. And like, it has been my dream ever since that one day, if I ever moved to New York, that I would be able to afford Gramercy Park so that I could have access to this park. But yeah, stunning real estate. The crown molding is beautiful in this building. Like, job well done.
It's not even a building. It's like a house.
A house.
But I think it could have been split up into like separate apartments, but it's not. And I mean, that it must be $10 million.
Easily more.
And that's why I just wonder if Aiden's like chipping in on any of it, if like how all of that works out. I don't think so. I think that's just all Big's money.
I think it is too. And knowing Carrie, like, she's an asshole, but I don't think in this case she would want to complicate this. And I feel like this would be a purchase she would make on her own. So I think that kind of ends it for us for these episodes. Do you have any other predictions for what these final two episodes of the season or series maybe will bring
us? I mean, I don't know what's going to – I mean, it's hard to tell if they are setting it up for an actual series finale. I think what they're going to do is like the smart thing, which is make it kind of work as both a season and a series finale in case they don't come back. I mean, I think with like the strike and everything, it's really difficult to know if and when it'll get greenlit or how that will change what maybe HBO was thinking about doing before the strike versus after. Who knows?
Yeah. Who knows?
I still think that a part of me still thinks that they're probably going to kill off Aiden. There's just something ominous about all of this. I don't know what it is, even though they portray it as like sunny, reunited, like beautiful second act love story kind of situation, or third act or whatever act we're in, love story. And I want to believe, but I don't even – I think like the only way that they could like have such a nuclear breakup again would be if like he died or like something happened to him.
I see kind of two paths here. I see either the path of, to your point, it ends because everything's just felt so ominous. Like, there's just always something dark that's been seeping in the background during these scenes and this plot line. The other option is, did you watch You're the Worst on FX?
Didn't finish it.
Okay. Why? Well, so in the end of that show, the main couple does end up together, but they choose not to get married because they choose to stay together every day. The thought is that every day we choose to be together, and like that's how they continue to stay together. They have a kid together and everything, but they never decide to get married. And I wonder if there's kind of something that leads us to a wedding where things don't go as planned and Aiden and Carrie end up still together, but in a situation where it's going to be them never getting married or something like that. I don't know. So that's the only other way I can kind of see this going. In terms of other predictions I have, I really hope that Shay and Miranda stay clear of one another, or they maybe have a conversation of closure. But I feel like they got closure last time around, spooning away after they broke up. So I don't really know where they go from there. And then I just want Harry to have a fun plot line, not one where he's portrayed as this like jealous husband, because that's never been Harry's MO. And for Charlotte to just live her life in the gallery and that's that. And, you know, the kids continue to do okay. I don't know what goes on with Brady and Lily.
One thing I really do want, I don't want Carrie to give her apartment to her little downstairs neighbor, Luce, or whatever her name is. I actually really want Carrie to sell her apartment. I was really excited when she said she was going to, because I just think it's time. Like, let it go. Move on. You're not this person anymore. Like, I either wanted her to go full in, move it, like stay in there forever or whatever, but like hanging on to it, like, what is the point? I just feel like it's like this, if this show wants to be so different in this other thing, then like, let's let it go and move on. And then if there is a third season, because I also think that's like a great way, it's a great series finale, is if she just sells it. I mean, even if she ends up selling it to that fucking annoying neighbor downstairs for like a dollar or whatever, because she clearly doesn't need the money. I just hope that she does actually sell it.
I like that plot line you bring up, which is that Carrie would sell it, but sell it to her neighbor at a very, very low price, or for jewelry or something.
Hopefully not. I mean, I didn't get a good look at that jewelry, so maybe not that, but like, you know, something.
I
but
mean, also, it's hot goods. It's hot goods, Margo.
I guess. We'll see. But yeah, I just hope that she actually goes through with that, because I just think it'd be such a cop out to just like rent it to this girl.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, let's go through and like complete the story and do like a full arc.
Yeah, I agree. I don't really have any other predictions. Do you have any other predictions?
No, but I will miss like watching this show with everybody on like a week to week basis. Like,
that was fun.
One of the few shows, I think it's like probably one of the only shows that I watch with like everyone else, so to speak, in real time. And it's always nice when everybody, even if we're dunking on it, it's nice to have a show that like a common show with like the internet, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, Max is one of the few streaming platforms out there that is releasing episodes on a week by week basis. Almost everything else comes out, if not all at once, at least in larger clusters. So the appointment mm-hmm. television of it all, like that we can, even though we're not watching it the same exact time, we're all watching it at a relatively similar time. It's been great to have that conversation in the real time.
Agreed. Well, thank you so much for listening to our summer season chatting about And Just Like That season 2. We will be back in a few weeks in September, because September's around the corner, and I am now done reminding you about that. If you like what you listen to, please make sure that you're subscribed wherever you are listening to this podcast. You can also, if you're able to and you want to support this podcast emotionally, you can leave us a 5-star review wherever you're listening to it. So whether that be Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And if you can't do that, or you already left us a 5-star review, tell a friend, tell an enemy, tell a coworker, tell a stranger on the street, tell your mailman about this podcast, and make sure you share it with them. And if you love us so much, you can obviously always join the Patreon at any point in time. There's a ton of content on there, plus old newsletters, all sorts of fun stuff. We're at Old Millennials Pod, and we have a $4 tier. We lowered it from $5 to $4, where you get just one bonus episode every month. And last month we talked about Barbie. There's a preview on this main feed. And this month we're going to do a little back to school shopping, a little trend watch. So if you want to hear our adventures on in our real time adventures on like urbanoutfitters.com and God knows where else, please join us over at Patreon. And until next time, we say bye-bye.
Bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.